If you want to get your Bibles and turn to Genesis chapter 5, we're going to be looking at this character of Enoch this morning, and there's not many characters when you begin looking at the study of the Old Testament. There's not too many characters that have fewer verses devoted to them than Enoch. There are some, but some of them we don't know a whole lot about. Just a couple things by way of introduction so that we know more about this man, Enoch. I think he's the first one we've studied this quarter that has lived in the patriarchal period. As I'm thinking about those that we've studied so far this quarter, I think most of them have lived in the Mosaic Age. So this is the first one where we've gone back and picked up somebody that was living in the patriarchal period, which was a different dispensation than what was the Mosaic Age, where you had the designated prophets and the designated priests. You go back to the patriarchal age, and that it was the time of the fatherly rule, where the father acted as the priest, the go-between between his family and God, and he acted as the prophet, the one who would receive those revelations from God given to the father that he would then turn around and pass on to his family. And so that's the role that Enoch had. He played that role in this particular dispensation. He was the seventh generation from Adam. And oftentimes when we read about the genealogy of Adam, we may not recognize that he lived 308 years contemporary with Adam. The last 308 years of Adam's life, Enoch was also living. Obviously there's a good chance that he knew Adam and that they were acquainted, and considering that would be his what? Great, however many times, grandfather. Perhaps they had family reunions every once in a while, and who knows how many hotels they needed for that family reunion. But here he is living 308 years contemporary with Adam, and here's a character that when you read the entire Bible, not just the Old Testament, but the entire Bible, there's only about 11 verses devoted to him. And two of those books, 1 Chronicles chapter 1 and Luke chapter 3, are just chronological or genealogical in their nature, and so they don't give us any information other than who begot who. And so you take those two verses out, and then you've got nine verses and three books that we're going to look at this morning. One of them's in the Old Testament, two of them are in the New Testament. So go to Genesis chapter 5 and see what we know about this character Enoch. Genesis chapter 5, verses 21 through 24. It says that Enoch lived 65 years. If you go back up to verse 19, it says that Jared, the end of verse 18, Jared begot Enoch. And so that's his introduction into life. Verse 21, Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. What do we know about Methuselah? All right, he's the guy who lived the longest. After he begot Methuselah, verse 22, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Twice in this passage, it says that Enoch walked with God. And I want you to think about this morning, think about at least those three words, walked with God. First of all, think about that word walked, and how simple that word is. You know, it's our relationship with God is not intended to be complicated. And it's not intended to set forth before us things that we can't accomplish. And here's a guy that very little we know about him, but what do we know about him? He walked with God. And in a very simple and understandable and in something that we can do. He didn't do something that we can't do. This man, he walked with God. He walked with God daily, at least for 300 years. He walked with God. Now you do the math. Here's almost 110,000 days that he walked with God. Is that a long time? It's more days than you and I are ever going to see on this earth. Does that show a level of commitment that this man has? That he would take 110,000 days of his life and devote them to God. Walking denotes activity. You can't walk passively, can you? Have you ever used that in a passive sense? You can't use the word walk, and it's not a passive verb. Walking involves some sort of activity. Walking involves a choice. He had to choose to begin walking. It was not something that was imposed upon him. God didn't force him to walk. He chose to walk. And the verb there back in the Hebrew has a reflexive meaning. That's just that idea that he made the decision for himself, not only to start walking, but he made the choice and the decision for himself to keep walking. He wasn't one of these fickle kind of people that would start something and then stop it, or start something and then just lose their energy and give up. So when you think about Enoch, Enoch's a man who walked with God, something that he did every day, something that required activity on his part. Not, it wasn't a passive relationship that he had with God. There was activity, but all of it was his own choice to give his life to God. So there's the word walked. What about the little word with? What is the little word with in English grammar? What would the word with be? A verb? A noun? A preposition. There's our English scholars. The only two people in here that know with is a preposition. There may be two others. You were just afraid to say the word because it has so many syllables. It's a preposition. Enoch walked with God. If you go back and look at some others who have that same word walk, they have a different, there's some different prepositions that are used in the Bible. God told Abraham to walk before him. Now, obviously, Abraham walked with God too, although the Bible doesn't say that. But we know he walked with God, but the preposition used for Abraham is that he was to walk before God. What does that preposition indicate? Now that you've had time to read the screen. What does that preposition indicate? If you're before God, what does that mean? You're in front of him. What does that mean he sees? Everything you're doing. If you go out and you have your children walk in front of you, why? Because if they're behind you, and this isn't true of God, you know, God can see behind him too. So, but if your children are behind you, do you know what they're doing? I mean, you might have a pretty good idea. You know what they're doing. You know, they're sticking their tongue out at people, and you know, they're running around and pushing their sister and all that kind of thing. You probably have a pretty good idea. But if they're in front of you, then what? You can inspect everything they do. And you're aware of everything they do. Abraham was told, "You walk before me." Abraham was there before God, and everything Abraham did was seen by God. Same with us. We walk before God. Moses told the Israelites to walk after God. What does that preposition indicate? I mean, obviously they were walking before God too. Why were they told to walk after God? He's the leader. Pardon?
After his commandments and precepts.
All right. He set forth some commandments. He set forth even the pattern that we're to follow and we're to come after him. Does this get confusing to have this many prepositions about our walk? We're to walk before God because he's going to see everything we do. Oh, but we're also supposed to walk after God. He's our guide. He's the one that we're following. You know, what was the deal with Jonah? You remember Jonah? You know the four sentence outline in the book of Jonah? What did Jonah do in Jonah chapter 1? He ran where? Away from God. What did he do in chapter 2? He ran back to God. What did he do in chapter 3? He ran with God. What did he do in chapter 4? He ran ahead of God. Now that's where we don't need to get. We're before God, but we don't need to get ahead of God. Does that make sense? Here's our walk with God. We're always before him because he can see everything we're doing. But we're always after him because we need to follow after him. And then in the New Testament, we're told to walk in him, to walk in Christ. 1 John chapter 1 and verse 7, what does it say? If we walk in the light as what? As he is in the light. As Christians, we have a realm within which we're to live. Acts chapter 17, talking about God, says that in him we live and we move and we have our very being. This is where we're supposed to live and to abide, is in him. So we walk before him, we walk after him, we walk in him, and then just like Enoch, we walk with him. There's only two men in the Bible that it says that they walked with God. One was Enoch, the other was Noah. What does it mean that you walk with God? How is that different than before, after, and in him? If you're walking with him, what does that say about your companionship? You've got this constant, intimate companionship if you're walking together. You've got constant fellowship with God. You've got mutual fellowship with God. If you're not running way far ahead of him like Jonah tried to do, and if you're not straggling way behind like your kids do, right? I mean, you go to the mall or you go someplace with your kids and do they walk with you? No, they don't want to have anything to do with you. You know, you get in a public place and your kids are so far away from you so that nobody will tie the two of you together. Is that true or false? Is that still happening? That still happens. So we don't need to get so far ahead of God or so far behind God that somebody can't connect us together and say, oh, that person's with God. We got to be right there beside him. And that's where Enoch was. Enoch was right there beside him. When you walk with God, it's an indication that you're walking with a true friend. When you're walking with God, it's an indication that you're in company with somebody that you enjoy. Have you ever gone walking around with somebody that you really didn't want to be with? You might for a while, and then what are you trying to do the whole time? Man, you're trying to get away from them. You're trying to come up with an excuse to get yourself out of there, or maybe you're trying to come up with an excuse to get them out of there. You know, you're not enjoying it. But if you walked with somebody for 110,000 days, would that be an indication that you enjoyed it? You think Enoch had a companion that he was satisfied with? You think he had a companion from Amos chapter 3 that indicated that they were walking together? Amos asks a question and says, can two walk together? And the New King James says, unless they are agreed. Can two people walk together if they don't agree together? They're not going to be walking together for very long. Ultimately, they're going to end up splitting up at some point. You know, if you're walking with someone, it means you're going in that same direction with them. You can't be going in two different directions. But the New American Standard doesn't use the word agreed. New American Standard says, can two walk together unless they have an appointment? Did Enoch have an appointment with God? Every day. He had an appointment with God. And every day when Enoch got up, Enoch was walking with God, walking with his companion, walking there in full agreement with God. Who do you think was the one who yielded in that relationship? You think Enoch said, hey God, how about we go over here today? Or do you think Enoch just went wherever God wanted to go? You ever been riding in a car with somebody? You're the one riding? Who's in control of that situation? That's a trick question, by the way. If it's the wife who's sitting in the passenger seat, that's a bad example. But if you're in the passenger seat, it has nothing to do with my wife. Don't look at my wife. She doesn't tell me how to drive. If you're in the passenger seat of the car, how much control do you have? Very little. All right, you're in a passenger seat with your 15-year-old. How much control do you have? Not nearly as much as you want, right? You need another steering wheel and two more pedals on your side. Maybe just one pedal, the brake, and that would be enough, right? If you're in the driver's seat, how much control do you have? Supposedly, you have all control, right? Unless there's certain someone sitting in the passenger. Yes, Tasha. Absolutely. When we get to Hebrews chapter 11, we're going to talk about that word communion. Because when you get over to Hebrews chapter, I thought it was on this next slide. That's why I went to the next slide, because I thought you were leading right into the next point. But I think it's a few slides ahead when we get to Hebrews chapter 11. But absolutely, our relationship with God and our walking with God shows a communion. What does that mean? I mean, the basis of the word communion is that we have something in common. And so there is that mutual relationship that you have. And the only way that that can work is if you let God be the one in the driver's seat. You know, if we're the ones who constantly have to be in control and be the one in the driver's seat and put God over in the passenger seat, and you're just going to follow along and you're going to be happy with me, whatever you get, what kind of relationship is that? Enoch walked. He walked with God. And now let's look at that third word and the idea that Enoch could have chosen any companion to walk with, couldn't he? I mean, how many companions are there that people can choose from to spend time with? He could have spent time with anybody. And of all the companions on the face of the earth, he chose God. Did he know something about friendship? Did he know passages in the Bible that weren't even in the Bible yet because they hadn't been written? You know, did he know the passage in the book of Proverbs about a righteous man chooses his friends carefully? Did Enoch do that? Did Enoch choose his friends carefully? Sure he did. And he chose the very companion that he needed for his life to go in the right direction. Did he know the passage that says, "Be not deceived, evil companions corrupt good habits, good morals"? Well, he didn't know the passage because it didn't exist yet, but did his life exemplify the passage? Yeah, just by the choosing of his travel companion. Enoch was dead to the world. Enoch chose to be alive to God, and he chose all of these things that would exhibit materialism, all of these things that would exhibit worldliness. He chose not to allow those to sway him, to take him away. And how do we know that? What words in those verses that we read in Genesis 5 tells us that he was dead to the world and alive to God? Does it say that? Does it say those words? It doesn't say those words. So how do we know that this is true? Twice it said that he walked with God. What does Jesus say in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24? No man can serve two masters. Is it possible that Enoch could have been best friends with God and at the same time been holding on to his materialistic life? Is it possible that he could have walked daily, 110,000 days of his life, walked side by side in complete agreement and union with God? Is it possible he could have done that and at the same time been holding on to a worldly attitude? It's not possible. Jesus says, no man can serve two masters. And when Enoch chose the one whom he would serve, when Enoch chose the one that he would walk with, he thereby chose every other one that he would not. And he wouldn't have anything to do with them. Enoch chose to give his life to God, and he did this even before his children. I don't know if it's reading too much into the text or not. I feel it is sometimes. But in verse 22, in Genesis chapter 5 and verse 22, when it says, after he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. There are some, and maybe it's proper to look at the passage this way, but there are some who come to the passage and say for the first 65 years of his life, Enoch was not really walking with God. But when he had Methuselah, then, as the verse says, after he begot Methuselah, he walked with God for 300 years. Maybe it is the case that for those first 65 years that he really wasn't walking with God. But then he had Methuselah, and maybe at that point he changed the direction of his life and changed the emphasis of his life. I don't know which is true or not. But is it the case sometimes that when we have children that we do a self-examination about the priorities in our life? Or should, anyway. In recognition that our children are going to grow up and emulate what we are doing. Our children to grow up and have the same values that we have. And so I have seen parents, thankfully, who, when they have children, reset some of their priorities towards a more godly priorities so that their children grow up in that kind of home. Sometimes we have kids and it's almost a wake-up call, isn't it? Here was Methuselah, and here were all the other sons and daughters. And whether he started at that point, and that's why I had on that first slide that he walked with God for 300 years. That's what it says here, that he walked with God for 300 years. It could have been 365 years. That's how long he lived. But we know for sure it was 300 years. And for those 300 years, his children saw the relationship that Enoch had with God. Think about what your children see, what your grandchildren see, what other people see, in case none of those examples fit you, what other people see in you in your relationship with God. Do you think Enoch's relationship with God had any kind of impact on his children? How could it not? How could it not? All right, look in Hebrews. It is here. See, I told you, Tasha, I thought it was in Genesis chapter 5, where it talked about Enoch having communion with God. What does that mean? You can't have communion with God unless you find joy and companionship in what God finds joy in. You can't have communion with God unless you hate those things that God hates. And so here's this relationship that he's got with God, that Enoch has with God. And Enoch knew, although the passage wasn't there, obviously, but he knew, for what fellowship can righteousness have with lawlessness? Enoch's own life exemplified that in the communion that he had with God. And his relationship with God was all that was important to him. His relationship with God was his very life. And I can't help but think he had the same heart that Joseph had when Potiphar's wife tried to get Joseph to sin. You know what Joseph said? How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? What was most important to Joseph? His relationship with God. Doing what was right. That was most important to Joseph. And I can't help believe that was the same thing with Enoch. That every decision that came about, he's had to say, how is this going to affect my relationship with God? Okay, now Hebrews chapter 11. There's two passages in the New Testament give us more, another insight into the life of Enoch. One of them is in Hebrews chapter 11, that great chapter of faith where the heroes of faith are talked about. It's in Hebrews 11 and verse 5, where it says, by faith Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. We learn a little bit more about Enoch in that passage. Primarily what we learn about him is that he pleased God. Here's a man. We know that he lived 365 years. We know that he was taken up by God. That's what this passage says. And we know that before he was taken up by God, that he had a testimony. He had a witness. He had evidence in his life of something. And there was evidence in his life that he pleased God. He pleased God because he was pleased with God's commandments. He pleased God because he readily put his faith into action. Enoch was happy to do these things. It was not a chore for him. It was not something that he felt he had to do. It was something that he was pleased to do. Enoch was pleased to engage in a lifelong walk with the Lord. You know, for you and me, that could be, what, 70, 80 years? 90, 100 years, you know, max, I guess. This guy lived at least 4 or 5 times longer than we will. So him giving his life as a life, and he was pleased to do it. And here we sit. We don't have thankfully, we don't have 365 years to live. Thankfully, we won't live that long. But here was a man that it didn't matter how many years. When he started his walk with God, did he know how many years it was going to be until it ended? Did he have that? Well, you know, maybe about three. That's about 300 years. I could do 300 years. We'll look at a slide in a minute. This shows his lifespan in comparison to everybody else's lifespan. How long were people living in the time of Enoch? 900 years. When this guy decides, I'm going to walk with God every day of my life, did he say, oh, maybe 300 years will do? No, his lifespan at that time is 900 years. But he was pleased to give however many days and however many years it took. Enoch was pleased to give his life to God, to purge himself of his own desires, to purge himself of worldly delights. And when Enoch was pleased to do what God wanted him to do, God was pleased with Enoch. Until we find pleasure in giving our lives to God, God won't find pleasure in us. Enoch was pleasing to God. That was the sum of his life. And the only reason that he was pleasing to God is because he first recognized what God had done for him. It's in 1 John chapter 4, where it says that we love God because why? He first loved us. Same with Enoch. Enoch knew the relationship that he had with God started with God. But our relationship with God is not intended to be one-sided. It's not that God does all of the work. It's not that God does all of the loving. It's not that God does all of, and I'm just the recipient. It's a two-way street. And it's a mutual relationship where I am pleased. Not that I'm under some have-to or obligation. I'm happy to do what God wants me to do. And when I do it, God turns around and he's happy. He's pleased with me. The very next verse in Hebrews chapter 11 says that without faith, it's impossible to please God. Same word please as in verse 6 is back up in verse 5. And Enoch was pleased to have faith in God, and God turned around and was pleased with him. We ran through that one. Look in Jude, the little book of Jude, for the last part about Enoch. What do we have? 8 minutes. Little book of Jude, we've got two verses about Enoch that we may not even know that they're in the Bible because we don't know the book of Jude very well. Jude verses 14 and 15. Now Enoch, he says, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about these men also. You begin looking for prophets in the Old Testament. And while Abraham is the first one that the actual word in the book of Genesis is used to call him a prophet, what does this say about Enoch? He's a prophet. Enoch prophesied about these men, what men? Saying, behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his saints. Notice the word thousands is in plural. Does it say that he's coming with 10,000 saints? Can you number them? 9,998, 9,999, 10,000. Okay, that's enough. It's plural. He's coming with myriads. This isn't intended to give us a number that we can tie to. It's 10,000s, myriads of his saints, to execute judgment on all. Now watch this verse in verse 15. He's coming to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. Who was Enoch prophesying against? Four times in verse 15, who's he prophesying against? The ungodly and their ungodly ways. Was Enoch prophesying about people in his own time or people in Jude's time? God is going to send judgment upon who? The ungodly. Was that going to come in Enoch's time? Yes. Was that going to come in Jude's time? Yes. Is that going to come in our time? Is God going to execute judgment upon the ungodly? Here's this prophet who had been with God and was coming back with a message, and he says, behold, the Lord is going to do something. He knew the Lord. He knew him intimately. And so the very beginning of his prophecy is not, here's what I'm saying, here's what my friend, here's what my companion, the Lord, is saying, that judgment is coming, that judgment is coming upon the ungodly. And we don't know specifically, but is it not likely that he's even looking forward to the time of the flood? He lived, he lived 600 years, 669 years, before the flood ever came. Is it possible that Enoch was even prophesying about the coming of the flood upon the ungodly? Some have looked at his son's name, Methuselah. It's a compound Hebrew word. Part of the word means he dieth, and part of the word means he sendeth out. How would you like part of your name to mean he dieth? You know, that's probably not the most impressive thing. But when you put those two together, he dieth, he sendeth out, the Hebrew word could mean he dieth in the year of the flood. We don't know the means of Methuselah's death. We don't know if it was by natural causes or if we don't know if he died in the waters of the flood. We know he died the year of the flood when you track the genealogies. So either Methuselah died the year of the flood, maybe before the flood came, just because he was the oldest guy who ever lived and he needed to die, or maybe he was ungodly himself. What would it say about Enoch if he was prophesying about the judgment coming against his own son, his own children? And perhaps, and obviously it must have through some of his descendants, if there's only eight who are saved in that flood. Here's Enoch. He's a prophet, and he prophesies about the coming judgment. The other thing we see about Enoch, and I wish we had more time to spend about this, is to talk about Enoch's immortality. You have to be careful with the word immortality, by the way. It's one letter away from immorality. I don't know if you realize that. The only difference between immorality and immortality is the letter T in the middle. So when you're writing that, especially when you're writing it, there's one of these slides I had to go back and fix because I had immorality instead of immortality, and that's completely different things, right? Here's the immortal one. In Genesis chapter 5, you have this genealogical record. You have 10 generations mentioned in Genesis chapter 5, and look at what it says about all of them. And he died, and he died, and he died, and he died, and he died. What does it say about this guy Enoch? And he not. The word was is in italics in King James, New King James. Perhaps it's not there in the original. He was not. What does that mean about Enoch? He didn't die. What do you think that whole ordeal, how do you think that impacted the people in his day? Genesis 5 says he was not, for God took him. Hebrews chapter 5 not only says he was not, but it says he was not found. You think they went searching for him? I mean, what do we do today when we have missing person? You know, we've got all of these Amber Alerts and everything else with missing people and police and everybody get... This guy disappears. And to our knowledge, he hadn't been sick. His body wasn't found. And in reality, he's just a young whippersnapper, right? He's only 365 years old. This guy's a young adult. He's not even middle-aged. Can you imagine that? He's 365 years old. He's not even middle-aged. Where is this guy? You know, he's too young to have disappeared. Where did he go? What did they know about Enoch? If they had gone searching for him, you know what we usually do when we're missing somebody? Who is the last person to see him? And does anybody know where they were going the last time we heard from them? Is that not what the police try to find out? Who was the last person they were with? And where were they going the last time somebody saw him? Who was the last person that Enoch was with? God. Where was he going the last time somebody saw him? Oh, he was walking with God. What does that tell you about where he must have gone? You know, I don't know how much they understood about life after death. I think they understood more than we give them credit for. But here's what they understand. They understand that Enoch spent his life walking with God. Enoch spent his life doing what God wanted him to do. Enoch spent his life perhaps walking so close to God's house that maybe God just said, hey, why don't you come over to my house and stay today instead of going back home? Folks, how close do we walk to God? Could we emulate Enoch at all? You know, we are going to live eternally somewhere. Enoch lived his entire life with God so that he could live an eternity with God. There was no mistaking what was most important to him. The only thing the Bible tells us about this guy, he walked with God, he walked with God. He pleased God. And I think if we try to take any lesson from this man, we've got to examine ourselves and say, what am I doing? How can I examine my own self and say, how closely am I with God? How much of a companion, how much of a friend am I with God? Okay, thank you. Sorry we ran through that at the end.